Hello, and welcome to the Strength to Be Human podcast with your host, author and playwright Mark Anthony Rossi. This show explores all forms of creativity for those searching for meaning and a place in the world. To err is human, but so is to love. Now, without further ado, here's your host.
Episode 31, The Case Against Perfection. I know you're probably saying, where's he going with this? Well, let me tell you where I'm going with this, all right? Perfection is a dangerous fantasy. It's something that we need to leave behind immediately. It causes so many people in the world so many problems. And it definitely affects writers, and that's what we're going to talk about in this episode, how it really affects people in general and writers in particular, okay? Where does this normally come from? What is perfection? Well, in my definition, perfection is pretty much what a neurotic person does because they believe that if things are perfect, somehow that makes everything safe and that gives them the maximum amount of control. So you'll come across these people. I'm sure everyone knows at least one of them in their lives. You know, the perfect person, the house has to be immaculate. You got to go into the house and take off your shoes, half your clothes, and sanitize your brain before you can sit down on, you know, a couch that probably has plastic on it. You know, make sure they don't have any spills. I don't know. It's kind of strange, isn't it? Yeah. Well, you got to wonder about people like that. And you should. You should always be suspicious of anybody that is doing anything that's trying to be perfect. Because it's a very bad idea. Okay? 99 is all we need. You're still going to get an A. You're still doing great. Why kill yourself over that other point to make it 100? Because it's not worth all the energy and all the sacrifice and sometimes all the damage that you do to yourself and the people around you. Because the pursuit for perfection brings us to many bad places in our lives, in our hearts and souls, very much in even our writing. You got people right now that they think that there's no way possible they could put down that novel after they write it for a year and look at it a week later and maybe start doing some proofreading or maybe even some changes to it. Somehow, somebody from the outside world has to go out there and do it. They got to pay thousands of dollars to some stranger who's not even qualified. Is there somebody qualified? Not really. But that goes you, that whole illusion of perfection. You get people out there with friends and relatives that can help you better and more accurate. But when people are just so convinced of perfection, well, that's what happens. You go to places you shouldn't go. You wind up getting taken advantage of. You wind up, in many ways, not only not getting perfection, but now you also lost some things as well. Maybe you've lost some money. Maybe you lost some pride. Maybe you lost some peace of mind. Maybe you lost a little bit of your humanity, which is what sometimes perfection, or the pursuit of it anyway, it does. Okay? Think about it this way. There are plenty of forces in our life and in the world out there that try to make us perfect, that want us to be perfect. All right? Science wants us to be perfect. It says that you're inefficient as a human being. Even though you're a bio machine, you're still inefficient. You need to have a chip in your brain, and you need to have artificial limbs, and you need to run 300 miles an hour and live for 1,000 years. Otherwise, you know, you're just an imperfect creature. Well, I'm happy being imperfect, okay? There's nothing wrong with it. And that's the problem. Until we start really understanding deep down inside that there's nothing wrong with being imperfect, we're gonna fall for the con man of perfection. A con man like Hitler, saying that the world had to be perfect into a certain thought frame and looked a certain way. Otherwise, he'd kill you and put you in the oven someplace. There you go. Another wonderful example of somebody trying to pursue perfection. And every time these people do these sort of things, it's always at the expense of us. Because they never seem to have a problem with it. Then nothing happens to them, you know? Hitler was talking about blue eyes and blonde-haired people, and I didn't notice any of the photographs. He was changing in the way he was looking. I guess that's for everybody else. And that's the problem with perfection. It winds up being for everybody else. And you wind up paying the price of somebody else's neuroticness or paranoia. Or even in his case, this, you know, extreme hatred. Yeah, you got the communists of the various utopias. like communism and all the harm it's done to Russia and other parts of the world. Failed everywhere, of course. You see it right now in your eyes in Venezuela. Complete country falling apart. You can't even go to the countryside without five people robbing you, four people raping you, and the other ones wanting to see if you have a candy bar on you or something, because they're all starving to death. That was their idea of perfection. Yeah, okay. That sounds so perfect. Yeah, everybody's perfectly going to die. Another example there of horrible perfection. Keep this in mind, okay? Perfection is not really natural. I mean, we are in our natural state to be imperfect. It's what makes us human, and what's what makes humans so interesting. There's plenty of things that couldn't have been sung or written or sculpted. Plenty of artistic achievements that wouldn't have been done if those people were perfect. Think about that. They were perfect. They wouldn't have had the drive to create something in the first place. Oh, I'm perfect. I don't need that. The world is perfect. We don't want that. No. That's why, in many ways, if you think about it, whether by design or accident, because you can believe in God and you don't have to believe in a God, there seems to be a serious need for the imperfection of the world because it lets us strive to do things. Now, I don't really believe many people striving to be perfect. I don't even think that's a built-in thing in us. But it is striving that we want something better. We want something interesting. We want something different. And having an imperfection in the world, or having even imperfection in ourselves, seems to allow that. It's almost like it's a built-in thing. Which means it's not a bad thing. It's probably a wonderful, gracious thing if you really think deep down inside about that. I mean, consider this. I don't want to get too super philosophical over here, but there wouldn't be love if there was perfection everywhere. I mean, love is what allows us two imperfect people to come together. That's what makes it so magical. It's why science can't define what it is, but we all know it's there. Well, it's not there because people are perfect. It's not. And in fact, that's the glue of love. It can meld people together who have all these issues. And love, sometimes love is blind, but I don't really think love is blind. I actually think love sees the imperfection in us and still says, yeah, I want to be with that person. Despite the fact that they don't know how to put their socks in a hamper or use a toothbrush more than once a year or something like that. You know, just the stupid things that we do. It still sees that and says, I'm still going to be with that person. They're still worth my time and my effort. I mean, maybe sometimes love can be dumb that, you know, maybe I'll get them to clean their room better. I got kids, so. There goes my perfection dream down the window. All right. Or maybe I'll have them, they clean their house better. Or maybe they comb their hair more. Or maybe they wear a better dress or a nicer pair of shoes. Or maybe they just don't swear as much. There's all kinds of things that we'd want. And I don't know if that makes the person perfect if they do these things or not. But I do know that every time you encounter somebody that has one of these perfection diseases, that's what I kind of tend to call them, they always have to have other problems, you know? The perfectionist people, they always seem to be the most insecure. Isn't that unusual? They're working hard, they're trying to be perfect and everything, and they're the most insecure. It seems to be not only a dichotomy, it seems to be a massive contradiction. That makes me suspicious right there. Really? You have to wonder. And if you don't wonder, maybe you're a bit perfectionist side yourself, but it's bad. It's bad for us as human beings, folks, because it brings upon us an unreasonable level of expectation that you can't sustain. It's not possible to run around in a relationship and keeping that going and have kids running around and trying to keep them from, you know, being bad students or bad citizens or just a bad pain in the neck and still maybe get your hobby done, or maybe watch a show you've been wanting to watch, or sing a song in the shower, or write a poem, or compose a play. You can't do it all and be close to being perfect. It's just not possible. So when you put that undue burden on yourself, you're just stretching yourself out for no good reason. It's just almost like you're saying, I got to have high blood pressure. This is so much fun. Well, it's not. So you got to start learning to stay away from that. Learn to let certain things go. Let things, certain things be they are. I tell my wife all the time, I like the house clean. But unless I'm going to have some guests over, I'm not killing myself to make it perfect. I don't see the point. I'm going to mess it up later, or the kids are going to mess it up later. Anyway, so I clean it as much as I can clean it, as long as it's relatively clean and neat. I'll live with that. I let the rest of it go. I can't afford to go over there and bleach the floor four times and vacuum the rug nine times because the cat went on it and dropped a hairball or something. Hey, I'm not living in a museum. It's a house, okay? Maybe the museum can afford to be clean and perfect. Maybe it should be because, you know, we're paying for it to be there and the stuff that's in there is old and needs to be preserved. You can't go around having too much dirt and grime and issues, and I got all that. But, you know, I guarantee you even the museum's going to be dirty at times. That's just the way things sometimes have to be. And sometimes we have to figure out a way, maybe not every day, but we have to figure out a way sometimes to let certain things go. And I don't mean go like you don't care anymore. I don't mean go like I'm just going to have to lose this battle because I've won the war. I mean, none of those corny terms that usually don't mean a whole lot of anything. I'm just talking about willfully saying to yourself, you know, this car doesn't have to be perfectly vacuumed for me to have a good day. This house doesn't have to be immaculate for me to feel good about myself. These kids don't have to be perfect all the time on everything they do and say. For that means saying that I'm a bad parent. That's what I mean. Giving yourself permission to be imperfect, to be a bit casual, to let your hair down, because this affects your stress. It affects your blood pressure. It affects your mental well-being and how you even view the world. And ultimately, that's going to affect your art, particularly if you're a writer, where the state of mind and even your emotional stability, you know, can be altered, and then that hurts what you're trying to do. If you ever talk to somebody that has writer's block, you're going to find out that almost never was it a situation where they ran out of ideas. Oh man, I got writer's block today. I'm out of ideas. No, not really. Nobody's really out of ideas. You know, sometimes they're just out of that mental energy, that emotional stamina that's necessary to pursue creative things, because it is so burnt out from all the rest of the week or the day or the month or things that happen. You know, you got a relative sick, or you got a kid not listening, or you got a wife that, you know, this is the week where nothing you seem to do is correct. I have a few more of those than usual, but still, you get my point. That adds up. It adds up in your mind. And sometimes even in your heart, no different than the clutter that you get from a computer that you got to clean out every week or two to keep it going at the proper speed, because it gets all those little bits of junk from the internet and the things you're doing or the things that you're erasing. So it's real important to do that. It's the same way with people. Sometimes you got to clear your mind out. Some people, they'll take a run to do that, maybe run a mile or two. Some just take a big old hot bath without anyone bothering them. Put some oil in there, maybe listen to some cool classical music or something, or Vangelis. It's one of my favorites. Nice and classical, interesting, almost intellectual in a way it puts things together, but still can move you. We need that. We need that because even when we're not trying to be imperfect, we could be stressed out. We could be pushed upon. We need to be able to settle to recharge ourselves, because it's a chore even when you don't want to be a perfect person. And that's one of the problems, though, is when people, and that's really what the show's about, the case against perfection. And that is a big part of the case right there, is how really unneeded it is. Life's already hard enough and complicated enough. And if you're not practicing some discipline in your craft, not trying to balance things out as much as possible through time management, you know, not considering that the world and the job and the relationships and children and all that stuff, they do have a bearing, you know, on how you operate as a person and even how you operate as an artist. So why add the incredible, unrealistic, in many cases ridiculous burden of being perfect? I say, whenever you can, try to talk those people down off that ledge. And sometimes if you can't, you know, I avoid them. I've known too many of those people that there's no really way to talk to them or to understand where they're coming from, because they're simply too far out there on this perfectionist fantasy. To me, it's not only very annoying, you know, it irritates me because they don't know how to keep that stuff to themselves. That's the one problem, you know? I mean, even smokers will step outside to have a smoke. They're not going to be in your face with it. But those perfectionist people are everything, you know? Oh, my God, you left a microscopic crumb on my ground. Oh, my God, you've done this, you've done that. This, because if not everything is exactly correct, they have a problem, and they start melting down. And they make you feel weird, make you feel agitated, make you feel sad. Sometimes they even make you feel guilty, which is crazy. It's one of the worst things, to get some guilt from somebody who's a perfectionist nut. No, I stopped that a long time ago. I just get rid of those people. If they can't come back to earth, or if they can't figure out a way to do that out of a way from me, or don't try to bring that over to me, because it is something very, very wrong with it. The case of perfection is not a difficult case to make, mainly because if you think about it, in the final analysis, do you really want to be perfect? Isn't there a certain stress relief by not being perfect? By trying to see the world as it is rather than how you think it should be? Because those people, that's one of the reasons why there's so many problems with these perfectionist people, is they seem to have a vision of something that's not there. Now, I got when you want to have faith into something and you're working towards it, I don't have a problem with all that. But if you're already saying it's here and I got to do this to get it there as well, well, then we're not really talking about faith anymore. You know, we're talking about a fantasy that you're trying to make true. And that's never really a helpful thing. Sometimes, and I've talked to friends that are really, really, really tech-oriented, some of that stuff rubs off people. You know, they think that you have to be as efficient as a computer, or, you know, you're not really an interesting person. I don't know about you folks, but I'm not interested and being a machine. Being human is wonderful enough. I don't need to be a machine like science says they like me to be. I don't need to be some supernatural person like religion says I'm supposed to be. I just need to be a human. That's why I was born. That's why I was brought here, to get these things done as a human, not as a perfect machine or a perfect spiritual specimen. Or, you know, I understand that some Eastern religions, you come back as a cricket or a hat or a horse or whatever, because you got to keep trying over and over again until you finally get it right. I don't know. I mean, I know that's some people's religious beliefs, but I'm glad it's not mine, because I don't know how that sounds. I don't know how that sounds positive or anything to me that I would want to pursue. If I don't make it this time, I'll come back as a cricket and maybe I could do it next time. Yeah, to me, it doesn't exactly sound exciting. It's more exciting to be in a temporary body, knowing all the things that we could still do to make life better, to make life more interesting, entertaining for us, to teach our kids for the next generation. You only could do that for being a human, and being an imperfect human is that. Sometimes what we do when we pass off some of this stuff, this perfectionist-like type stuff, you wind up giving people really the wrong impression. You wind up in many ways actually harming them. Parents are a perfect example of that, and I try not to be that kind of parent. I mean, I'm fond of telling my sons all the time, yes, I'm your father. No, I'm not perfect. Hey, I don't have all the answers. There's no book about all this as well, too. I can tell you some of my values and what I think is important for you to know. I can tell you some of my experiences. Maybe some of those will help. But I'm 50 years older than you are as well. So, I mean, there's only some of it that's gonna work out. I'm sorry, but we didn't have microwaves when I grew up, or computers that were talking, or none of that sort of stuff. Video games and all this crazy stuff. We didn't have any of that. We had to do a lot of things by hand, manual things, thinking things, interesting things I still find interesting, like reading a book, playing a board game, doing a trivia game or something, playing some cards. So I make sure I still get them involved in that sort of stuff, because otherwise they really wouldn't have a real attachment to anything that I'm about or anything that would be in the past, because all I know is right now. And right now is all of this nonsense that people want to pass on to your children that it don't tend to be true anyway. It's part of our bad habit of trying to make ourselves look perfect and try to give over some perfect lessons when we're not even living that way. Some people call that hypocrisy. I don't like to go that far with it, because I know people have good intentions. And many times when people are hypocritical, they don't have good intentions. They know that they're doing something contrary to what they're saying. But parents and others, they don't really always realize that. They just sometimes trying what they feel to do is the best. Try to let the kids see you in the best light possible, so that's where they can have the best example. And I got that. But it's not always the wisest thing to do, really. I really think I have a better connection with my own children by letting them understand that I don't know everything, and that I'll try to find out whenever I have to find out something that's important. And I think it's also important for them to understand, too, that I'm not perfect, and I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to make mistakes as a person, as an adult, as a husband, and as a father. That's just what's going to happen. I try to correct those, and if they see them, I try to point out, yeah, I messed that up, here's why, blah, 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 so they understand. You know, they're still going to have respect for you. No one's going to lose respect for you because suddenly you're a flawed human being. I honestly think that kids secretly lose respect for parents over the course of time when all the parents doing is trying to pretend that they're superhuman, that know everything, that could do everything, that are always right, and you're under my roof and you got to listen and blah, blah, blah. Now, yeah, they're under your roof, and yeah, they got to listen, but why lie to them about how many things that you've done right or wrong? Let's just be straight. Don't make a story up. Don't try to be somebody different for them. That's why a lot of parents have problems and why kids have problems, because the parent goes to the bridge club and acts one way, goes to work, acts another way, goes to church, act another way, and then comes home and suddenly they can walk on water, and you know, they're hanging out with, you know, the heavenly people every minute of the day. Let's not live that way. That really affects us as people, affects us as the roles we have as parents, even as citizens in society. And it definitely affects us as artists, because it's a way of splitting your personality. It's a way of shielding things about you that maybe won't come out in the writing then. Maybe you're not going to be able to get that best point across because you don't live that way. And honest writing and art should always be as honest as possible. I mean, that's the whole point of it, to try to give truth some scope. That's what we should be trying to do on a regular basis. Don't matter if you're writing a fantasy novel or a romance novel or a science fiction novel with, you know, aliens and robots everywhere. No one says that those things still can't tell essential truths about the characters and the universe and the worlds that were created, and even the humans that might be involved in that. We let loose the worst things sometimes, folks, when we're trying to be perfect rather than just try to be who we are, and be happy with certain perfections and certain imperfections. I mean, there's certain things that we do that are perfect, but not everything can be. And that's what we can't do. We can't, like, lose sight of that, because I really think that in many instances, that lessens us. I think the children see that, lessens us as parents. I think other people probably see it as well, too, and it lessens them. I mean, you know, when I see somebody that's always trying to act perfect, to me, automatically, I see them less. I know they think they're perfect or trying to be perfect, but I see them less right away. And why I do that is because I don't really think that's a reliable mode of expressing your humanity. I think it's false, ultimately, so I don't believe in it. I don't take it seriously. I don't think it's reliable, and I don't trust it. So why am I going to think anything more of it? I'm going to think something less of it. And that's what happens. You give out those, I think, those wrong vibes, the vibes of, because that's really what perfection is in the end. If you break it on down to the pieces, it's about somebody feeling insecure and therefore doing things artificially to gain some kind of control, so therefore they feel better. But usually it's built on a bunch of lies. Because that's really what insecurities are. If you think about it in the end, folks, that's what an insecurity is. It's just a classy little lie, you know? Oh, I can't really do this. I never really trained to be a dancer, so I'm just never going to dance again. Or, you know, I can't be as smart as they are. That's why they have a master's degree and I don't, because, you know, they're smarter than I am. These are really insecurities. They don't mean a whole lot if you were to take them apart and tackle them and you can deal with them, because they're usually completely untrue. A person's educational status, in the end, it doesn't mean a whole lot about them if they don't have character. If they're not exercising wisdom, if they can't be compassionate and decent, at least most of the times in their day, what does all that education do for them? Not a whole lot. I've found too many people already with so much advanced education, I don't even want to be around them. They're prejudicial and extremely judgmental. And ironically, because usually they're the ones saying, I don't like judgment, but they're very judgmental. And they try to make the life decisions based on, because they've had 16 more units of classroom study than you have. Really, that makes a lot of sense. Intelligence, oftenly, folks, is not really about an IQ number. It's really about collectively how you operate in the world. Do you have a mean streak of some common sense there that you can use? Have you collected enough experiences, good and bad, that help you become a wiser person? You know, do you have character? Can you honor your word? Can you stand by somebody that even has done wrong because you're a friend and you know something about loyalty? Because those are the things, when things go wrong in your life, those are the things you're going to need. And you're not going to find those in perfect people. They're too busy being insecure and selfish and controlling and halfway ridiculous. You're going to find that in the imperfect people that understand, yeah, I know how it is to screw up and get a traffic ticket because I wasn't looking and I went by 17 stop signs or whatever and got pulled over. Well, I know how it is to, you know, yell at somebody and now I'm thrown out of an establishment because I lost my temper, you know? Or, you know, I hit a guy in a bar because, you know, they said something stupid. I mean, those are the people that you're going to want with you when things go wrong, because they know something about that. They know how imperfect they can be. They have some knowledge and some heart and some compassion. That's really what a ball of intelligence is. It's a combination of those things. It's not because, you know, you can quote Shakespeare. I laugh all the time. I'm saying to people who think they're really intelligent, just because you quote Shakespeare doesn't make you intelligent. Just like the religious people I meet. Well, you quote the Bible and now you're religious. What does that really mean? The devil can quote the Bible. So you're not really saying anything or doing anything that's that extraordinary. Why would I'm going to believe you're any more sacred and holy than the guy down the street walking his dog? Can't even quote the grocery list his wife gave him 5 minutes ago. You're not any better than he is. So we get ourselves too much impressed with some of these superficial things, because that's really what perfection is. It's a kind of a superficiality, because it's something that people want to do, and you notice how they want to broadcast it, they want to show it off, so you have to, again, always wonder about that. Really? I just walked into your house, you have to show me that I can eat off the wall, and how your oven is cleaner than a baby's butt, and the floors sparkle where I need sunglasses at night. I mean, come on. What does any of that really mean anyway? I know people that are busy in their life. I'm sure that you are too. If you got that time to make your floor sparkle, don't tell me that in confidence even, because I'm going to make fun of you. I'm going to say, if you had that kind of time, then you could have knocked out another chapter in that novel. You could have made that poem better. You know what I mean? Could have made the play more snappy. Maybe you would have tried to figure out some humor in your short fiction. You could have did that a lot and spent the time on that rather than the stupid house and making the floor a little better. Making the bathroom, you know, smell like a rose garden. Hey, I got it. You don't want to always smell bad, but, you know, folks, it's the bathroom. You know what we do in there, right? It's not really supposed to be perfect, okay? That's why it's the bathroom. The living room should not smell like the bathroom, okay? I got that. But the bathroom, hey, it smells like the bathroom. Let's not get overconfident over here. Let's not get to the point where everything has to be absolutely perfect. Hey, did you notice my bathroom smelled like a rose garden? Yeah, well, it's not going to be in a few minutes when I go over there. So there you go with your perfection. Don't last too long now, does it? Yeah. Hopefully I remember the flush, okay? Yeah. Yep, exactly. That's what imperfect people do. And you work with them and you appreciate them and you ultimately trust them and rely upon them, because when something goes bad, they're going to be there for you, even if they forget to flush the toilet, okay? When something goes wrong, they're going to be there, even if they, didn't clean off the oven when they were done. Oh, my favorite one, he drank out of the jar of orange juice and didn't put it in a cup. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Diseases everywhere. Okay. These are annoyances and these are quirks. They're not necessarily things that are that horrible, but you have people that want to control everything and they draw something from that. And that's what you want to avoid. You want to avoid that kind of nonsense. It's really hard to live life, in my opinion, if you can't leave your house because the floor needs to be absolutely perfect. Or you can't jump in the car to even go down to the gas station because you forgot to vacuum it and it doesn't smell like ivory snow. Folks, perfection is an illusion. It's a dangerous fantasy. It's a bad idea. It can become a drug that can ruin you. It can become a goal that's not only attainable, but not even worth it in the end. It really isn't. It's only useful in but a few things, if you think about it. I'm sure there's a pitcher in baseball now and then that wanted to be able to pitch a perfect game. But guess what? It happens, but if you would add all the pitchers out there that are out there and look at the records of how many pitched a perfect game, the majority of them never even did it once. And sometimes they were pitching 15, 20 years. I'm sure that was maybe a goal in the back of their head, but you really think they were just thinking about that every single time they were pitching? No, because they have to think about the now and the real and the fact that the win is still more important than them being perfect. Think about that. Same thing with bowlers. I mean, they all want to try to get the perfect game, but so few do. Is it worthwhile to pursue? Not at the cost of messing up your game or screwing up your team's chances to win its own championship, or what it does to your body by excessively bowling all the time and hurting your arms and legs and everything, just for what? To be stuck in the mid-200s? Ha! Folks, huh? If you're in the mid-200s, why would you even want to be perfect? That's awesome. Everybody in the world who has a team's going to want you. You bowl 222, but you never do 300? Yeah, you're a real loser. No, I want you right now on my team, immediately. Don't care if you ever get 300 again. Just give me some averages like that. There you go. 99 is all you need, because you don't need the 100. It's not worth it. So really keep that in mind. Let yourself go. And when you let yourself go, you become healthier. You become more at ease. Less wound up. Less chances of having a writer's block. More chances of getting some connections with that mysterious muse out there that helps us to do things that are creative, that sometimes we don't even realize how important they are. But they are important. But they're only important when we begin to start recognizing that being human is not a bad thing. Just because you're flawed doesn't mean that that's a bad thing. The error is to be human. That's why I put the call on the show. The error is to be human. Yeah, but so is to love. What does that mean? Well, it means exactly that. It could be an accident-prone, sloppy weirdo, okay, and still be a wonderful person because you know something about love. Love of your spouse and love of your mother. Love of your family. Love of your friends, that you're there when they need you. Love of your community, that you try to volunteer, pick up some trash from the highway so it doesn't look horrible out there. Paint the animal shelter so it looks decent and people want to visit it to adopt animals rather than look like it's some kind of a hellhole and they don't want to go near it. Those are the kind of things that you could become, that you, many places are, but the people get so wound up in being trying to be something else that they didn't need to be in the first place, okay? I know women tell me all the time now, because I think they recognize it. I know my wife has. She's probably one of the few of that generation that recognize that story they were sold about how they can have it all. They can have a job and work this many hours and be a CEO of this and a great mother of that and blah, 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 and all this. No, sometimes you can't have it all, and that's not a bad thing. That was some fantasy sold to people under the guise of feminism. But what does feminism really, really mean? Let me tell you what I think it should mean, and I don't care if I'm a man and I'm telling you this or not. What feminism should mean is that we have a society that respects women and lets them adopt whatever role they want to do. If they want to be the business lady that works till they're 50 years old and never gets married and has kids, well, we have no right to judge something like that. That's the role she wanted. Let her have it. If she wants to juggle later on in life, getting married and having a couple kids and hoping her career is not going to get messed up along the way, well, that's what she also chose too. A little harder of a path, I would probably say, but it's very common. That's what feminism in to me is. But there was a point, I know, around the 80s when it started exploding. Well, people were like losing their minds and taking antidepressants and all this other stuff because they were sold some bill of goods about how they're supposed to be the perfect wife and the perfect worker and the perfect mother and the perfect genius and all this other stuff. And they found out that really wasn't possible. You know? They also found out some bad things about men. Thank God I'm not one of these guys. I mean, I'm not a perfect guy, and I'm never going to tell you I am. But I've always recognized that, you know, you got to pitch in a relationship. You can't just sit around and, you know, think they're going to do everything, and you're just going to read a paper. You know, those days are gone a long time ago, folks. They're not coming back either, you know. But they found bad things about men, too. I thought I would get more respect because I'm in the workforce. No, a lot of times you wasn't. I thought they would just pitch around in the house more, just naturally, because I'm also working and doing things. And I still got to try to take care of the kid, and I want them to do better. No. If you're not forming that up in the beginning of a relationship about the tasks that need to be done in a relationship and in the house and your family, and if you haven't spoken that out clearly, well, it's not going to happen naturally. People come from different places. You can't make all these assumptions. And that was it. They made all these assumptions about how everything's going to be grand and perfect, and it's not. And women are still dealing with these sort of things. Some of them are still dealing with it even when they have a husband that is pitching in and doing stuff. Because it's a lot of work to do all that. It really is. And just as much as a lot of work when you're just a stay-at-home mom doing all that stuff. That's a pretty enormous job too. But nothing's going to be perfect. It's not supposed to be. You're supposed to be able to say, this day sucked. And I might not be in the best of this day. I'm trying to learn something from that. Relax a little bit and go back tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow is going to be better. And I'm going to do my best to make it better. And that's a good thing. I think in many ways, imperfectionist in people allows us to be the best human beings that we can be. Because I don't think perfection does that. I don't think it suits us. I don't think we're made for it. I think we become less human when we try to be perfect and less compassionate and less loving. Because the more perfect you try to get, the more you sound like a robot, the more you start acting like a machine. When was the last time a machine loved you? When was the last time a machine that rescued you when you needed a kind word or a small hug? Or just a tail at night so you can go to bed, not worrying about having a bad day at school? Machines can't do that. Robots can't do that. Imperfect people, well, they can. And that's what makes us very special as human beings and as artists. Just keep that in mind. We don't really want perfection. Because if we had it, we wouldn't have love then. It wouldn't be in us any longer. We wouldn't be able to transmit it. We wouldn't be receiving it. That's what love is there for. It's there to fill in all the rest of the gaps, because we only can be so much as humans. And that's not a bad thing. And that is part of the learning about having strength to be human, to understand that. And to be happy in it, almost respectful that, hey, I'm not like a machine. I can think, I can feel, I can make a mistake, I can learn, maybe not make it anymore, or maybe make it again in another year. And just keep going. Keep living, keep learning, and keep loving. All right, folks, until next time, you keep creating, and thank you very much for making the show such a success. God bless you.
Thank you for listening. Please follow the show and visit our blog at strengthtobehuman.blogspot.com.